This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. And Wells Tech is on the air. This is Martin Spriggs, and we're doing episode 349 today for Tuesday, July 8th, 2014. And I have to admit, I have not been this nervous for a podcast in many, many episodes because, you might have already guessed, Sally's not here. She's taking a well-deserved vacation. She's in the woods somewhere in Wisconsin in her camper with her family. No, she is not totally disconnected from technology because I've seen a couple of emails from her, and it would not surprise me a bit if she found a way to watch the podcast. But Sally, rest up and come back relaxed and refreshed, and actually Sally will get to do the monologue for the next 2 weeks because I'm taking vacation. So it is that season, and so I'll do the best that I can, and hopefully I can make it through a podcast all by myself. If I can, I'll try and sneak in a little southern drawl once in a while just to make you all feel at home. See, I just did it right there. Nothing like Sally can do. So you've got me, for better or for worse, and we do have a discussion topic, even though I'm going to be discussing it with myself. If you are live with us, feel free to ask a question or make a comment, and we can dialogue via the Google Hangout Q&A function. If you've been with us for the last few weeks, you know we've been in a summer series, a little lighter fare for the podcast, and this show is no different, fortunately, for me, since I'm solo. And we're going to be looking at migrating our content from our Wells Tech Wiki site, which is getting a little oldie moldy, into a fresh new Google Sites Wiki. And I'm going to, those of you that are watching, I'll do a quick screen share to introduce you to that. Our Wells Tech Wiki is at wellstechwiki.gaps, that's G-A-P-P-S, .wells.net. GAPS stands for Google Apps, if that helps you remember it. wellstechwiki.gaps.wells.net. And once you get to that page, you will see a number of items down the left-hand side allowing you to click through the various pieces of content. And so far, we've covered Bible and church, and now we're up to communication. In fact, we got a good start on that last week. We'll finish that up this week. There is a help link there, how to edit the wiki, and an account request button if you'd like to contribute to the wiki rather than just viewing its content. It's easy to do. You just click that request an account button, and the email will go to Sally. She'll let you in, I'm thinking, maybe even on vacation. And we'd love to have you, because a wiki is not a wiki without you participating. And I know that you guys have great stuff that you'd like to contribute. So, as I mentioned, we are in the communication section. We talked about copyright, presentations, promotion, and social media last week. This week, and website creation and maintenance, where we talked about some content management systems like Drupal and Google Sites and WordPress and Final Web, which I know a lot of you are familiar with. So we're down to the last two subsections under website creation and maintenance, and that's getting started and webmaster tools. So let's take a look at the getting started area. First of all, we've got a checklist there that we had going in the old site, and this is something that we've developed over time and probably a good place to start if you are a webmaster, a Wells webmaster, and are in charge of any kind of website for your church or school or organization. This probably is a good checklist to get your hands on. There are 9 items on the checklist, anywhere from forming a web communications committee to identifying the audience, developing goals, menu structure and templating, start with the basics, Wells.net RSS feeds, getting help, and then ultimately communicating to everybody. There is a link there, and we've got this in a couple of different places on the site, a websites and missions white paper, which I probably wrote maybe 6 or 7 years ago, and it's been revised only once, but it's still got some good content in there if you're just starting out. Where do I start? How do I begin thinking about a website? So websites and missions, especially if you want to build a website for outreach or for evangelistic purposes. That's why I wrote the white paper in the first place. It was presented to the Board for Home Missions, which they shared with their missionaries. So you're more than welcome to take that, adapt it as you see fit. So checklist, good place to start if you're in that getting started mode. One thing that every website needs is good imagery, good graphic design, and there are some tools here that we've outlined, some free graphic design software. And if you've watched this show even once or twice, you've probably heard us talk about one of these called PicMonkey. PicMonkey is a free service, although there is a premium subscription that you can purchase, which is actually fairly inexpensive. But PicMonkey is a great place to do image editing. It's all web-based. You upload an image. You can crop it, resize, take out red eye, add some text over the top, do collages, all kinds of good stuff with PicMonkey. So that link is there. There's also some other things that you may want to check out as far as some free graphic design software. Maybe you don't want to go that route. Maybe you want to find a professional, a Wells professional that could help you out, and we have a list of those people there. Some of them we've even had on the show before, and we have links there to their websites as well as when we interviewed them on the show. Some of them a number of years back, but I think they're probably still in business and probably willing to help your church or school with the design of the imagery for your website or your brochure, business cards, those kinds of things. So take a look at that list under the graphic design section on the wiki under Getting Started. So a number of other sections here, one that we call intranets. And intranets were a whole topic that Sally and I discussed a number of years back as a way to get your members engaged and a way to communicate internally. So not outreach, but inreach, so to speak. And we have a sample final website that was used for an intranet, kind of this member area. We propped up a Training Lutheran Church member website, and there's a login there that you can check that out. And then some potential platforms. So if you're thinking about putting together an internal site, an intranet, and maybe that's for council meetings, maybe that's for member sharing, discussion boards, document sharing, whatever it is, internal groups, there are a bunch of platforms. Google Apps is probably at the top of the heap, and we've talked more about them than anything else. And we've got a link there about from Joshua Shanick, who has an experience with implementing Google Apps at KML, Kettle Moraine Lutheran High School in Jackson, Wisconsin. But there are other potential platforms from other vendors, some of them free, some of them cost something. But if you're in the market for an intranet, there are some resources there. Then we have a section called the five whys, and I'll have to tip my hat to Sally for this one. She uses this when she talks about website development, the five W's of church. Did I say whys? W's. The five W's of church and school websites. Why have a website? Who should create and maintain the site? What should be on the site? Where do we put the content? And finally, the last is when. When do we need to update the site? And then she has her typical Langyap section, the little something extra, and there's some good stuff there as well. There's some resources regarding Twitter, this wiki, the Wells Tech community. We have a great resource in our listserv and our Facebook group, and some other resources there under the five whys section. And the last item under getting started is website content. And we just have two documents there. One I referenced already, websites and missions, so that PDF is there again. But last year, Sally and I wrote a book together, an ebook, all about website content. So getting the technology up and running and thinking through that and structure and menus and templates, those kinds of things, that's one thing. What do you put on the site? How do you populate it? How do you think through what goes on each page? That's what our ebook was about. So it's a fairly recent work that we've done. I mean, it's nothing, you know, it's not volumes and volumes. We've got a number of pages per chapter, but just some good resources that we talked through and references to the shows that we did them on. So that is our WellsTech website content ebook, and that is listed there as well. So that concludes that getting started section, but I'm looking forward to what you guys might think would be good content or good subpages for this area. What do you need to get started with a website? What kinds of planning resources and so on and so forth? Then the last section that we're going to cover today as far as content that we're migrating from the old wiki to the new wiki is webmaster tools. And we've got four categories there. One of them, which is probably something that every webmaster today needs in their tool belt, is the ability to build forms, collecting information from your site visitors. And we actually had, not too long ago, had a WellsTech episode all about building better forms. So there's a link there to that whole show. We have linked to some pretty popular form tools, including Google Forms, WooFoo, and JotForms are all kind of at the top of the heap when you're talking about forms. Also under Webmaster Tools, we have image editing, and there again we have PicMonkey, so we're looking to push, as well as in the Getting Started section, just keep a running list of those image editing tools that could be used if you are interested in sprucing those things up and getting them on your website, which is always a good idea. Then we have a very popular section on RSS, very misunderstood about what it can and can't do. Stands for Really Simple Syndication. We've done a number of podcasts on it. We have a number of videos. It really helps the webmaster out because what it allows you to do is, with a little bit of code, bring in content from other resources like Wells.net. So you can get a daily devotion every day that just shows up on your website. You can get daily Bible readings. You can get audio files, video files. All that stuff can come into your website with you doing very little. So it keeps it fresh. There are also kinds of mashup or mix-up kinds of tools that allow you to bring in various RSS feeds into one feed so that it appears as one stream of content versus, you know, here's our text, here's our video, here's our audio. So you have a lot of resources there so you can get smart on RSS. And I'd say that's probably a requirement for anybody who is managing a website. You have to know what RSS is all about. And finally, the last section are just we're kind of calling this widgets, little things that you can put on your website. For instance, the one thing that we have here is the ability to subscribe to the Together e-newsletter. So we have a little link there, a little code there that allows you to embed it right on your website. And hopefully we can build that up over time with lots of different kinds of widgets that you can just throw on your web page and use them right out of the box. So that concludes our web creation and maintenance section. Let me jump off the screen share real quickly here. And next week when Sally is at the controls, she is going to talk about infrastructure and specifically audio hardware, which will be very interesting because I usually handle the audio hardware for the show, so it's good for her and it's great for you to hear her perspective on some of the things that have been shared in this audio hardware section, including sharing your setup, training and tutorials, which is really her sweet spot, and then finally troubleshooting. What do you do when things go wrong? Some really good content there, and that's definitely an area that there's a lot of interest in. Want to welcome Rachel Arnold into the show. She says, hey, Martin, it's Rachel Arnold. First time watching you live. Can't wait. Thanks, Rachel, for joining us. Now I don't feel quite as alone. Let me just remove that comment. And if there's anybody else viewing, please chime in at any point, and I'll try and grab the questions or comments and share those with the class. So it's about time for us to move on to our tips and picks of the week. Actually, there'll be a tip and a pick of the week, singular. My tip of the week, and again, let me do a quick screen share. And hopefully that's coming up. From time to time, there is a need, and I've done it a number of times, moving from one mobile platform to another. So when mobile phones and smartphones first came out, everybody was using the iPhone. But now you see a lot more Android phones. In fact, when I go out to Hong Kong or Japan, East Asia, you see far more Android phones than you do iPhones. And I think you're starting to see a little shift here in the States, too. A lot of people with Android phones, for whatever reason, it's a little more open. Usually they're a little cheaper. There's more selection than the iPhone. But the problem is, if you started with an iPhone and you're on iOS and you activated iMessage, which is actually a pretty cool feature for the iPhone, which allows you to send text messaging without SMS. So you're just using an app and you're communicating over the internet. So you're not using up SMS messages or text messages. iMessage will work between iOS devices, between Apple devices. The problem begins when, like in my case, I went to an Android phone because I have a couple of phones that I test with, so I switch phones depending on what I'm testing with for the Wells mobile app. Switched to Android recently, and sometimes if you've connected your phone number to iMessage, other people who use iPhones or iPads can no longer send you messages, even SMS messages. They send it and it doesn't go through. So there's a whole process sometimes that you have to go through, and I had to call Apple to do that. But I found a good page here on the Apple website, on the support.apple.com website, called Deactivating iMessage. And they walk you through a number of things that you can try. And we'll put this in the show notes, where if you're having this problem where you've switched phones, you went from iOS to Android, and now nobody can send you text messages who's using iPhones, this is the place to go. There are suggestions here about turning off iMessage and then also sending a text message called stop to a particular number, resetting your network settings, contacting Apple support, which is what I eventually had to do. Even changing your Apple ID password sometimes is a solution. Pretty annoying problem. Apple says I think they're working on this, and maybe with iOS 8 they'll fix this. But your tip, if you're a switcher going from iPhone to Android or Windows phone, I suppose, too, or any other phone other than an iPhone, this is probably something you're going to want to check out if you're having problems receiving those text messages from your iPhone friends. So that is my tip of the week. My pick of the week is a little website I ran across, and I'm really surprised I have not found this before because I teach a class called Dynamic Classroom Presentations, and I'm always on the prowl for good PowerPoint resources, and I found a great one. It's called fppt.com. or freepowerpointtemplates.com. And basically what it is, it's a collection of PowerPoint backgrounds and templates that are free to download and use, and there are a ton of them here in almost every shape, size, color, flavor. There's a lot of great educational ones. If I just click here on the top rated link at the top of the page, we see all kinds of backgrounds for different occasions, some of them educational, some of them wintry scenes, spring scenes, sports scenes, all kinds of things that would meet your needs. What's really neat, though, is if you go under the categories section of fppt.com, there's a section called Religious PowerPoint Templates, so you can check that out. And there's one called Educational PowerPoint Templates, and currently there's 298 templates just in that category alone. So if you are using PowerPoint, and PowerPoint has come a long way, I really like version 2013, this is a site to bookmark and go back to if you're looking to spruce things up a little bit and use different templates. So that is my pick of the week. FPP, two P's, FPPT.com. Let's move right along. And so far, so good, I think. Also, somebody from Brazil is joining us. Paulo de Castro, just saying hello from Brazil. Yes, we have WM2. Thanks for chiming in, and thanks for watching. Great. Next, let's find my mind map, because I'm lost without Sally. Community feedback, and this will be the challenge of the day, because I never do community feedback, but fortunately for you, we have some excellent feedback that I need to share. One of them is a little offering from Concordia Technology Solutions. Let me do a quick screen share again so I can show you that. So we have, and we received an email from, oops, wrong one. Sorry about that. One second. See, one more second. All you audio listeners, I'm sure, are enthralled with this. Here we go. So Church 360 is a product from Concordia Technology Solutions. And what they have made available to basically everybody is, if you do not have a Church 360 account and are thinking about subscribing to their ledger package, which is their church finance offering. Normally there's a $199 setup fee, but for the month of July they are waiving that. So if you're thinking about using their ledger product, you may want to take advantage of this $199 offer. Also, if you're interested in the whole Church 360 church management software solution, we have negotiated a relationship with Concordia to give Wells Churches a discount on the member product and on the ledger product as well. It's actually very, very reasonable. It's flat priced for us, which is not normally the case. So it's a one size, it's a one price fits all, and that price is actually very economical regardless of your size. So you may want to think about taking advantage of that, especially if you're interested in the ledger, because until July 31st, you can get it for free as far as the setup cost is concerned. Next, let's move on to a submission by, let's see, how did this come to us? Digo, Jason Winjet, who's a frequent contributor, forwarded an article to us, or forwarded us a link, and I've got it up here on the screen, about from How to Geek. And I love the title. How do you find the original source of an image? So here's the question. So you've downloaded an image. Maybe it's been sitting on your computer for a long time, and you want to insert it into a PowerPoint or use it on your website, but you're not quite sure where it came from and what maybe the copyright restrictions are, or you want to give credit for it if it's a fair use scenario. So there are a couple of suggestions. So on How to Geek, the question was asked, where did my image come from? What do you do when you have an awesome image that you downloaded long ago but are unable to remember the website you found it on? Are there any easy ways to find the original website again? And fortunately for us, there are a couple of suggestions in this blog post. One of them was to use images.google.com. And I did that just as a sample here, and we can see that on the screen, and I've got a image that I had downloaded a number of weeks ago, just a picture of some oranges that I was using as a PowerPoint background. And I don't remember where I got it, but what I did was I went to images.google.com. I clicked on the little camera icon, which allows you to search by image. And you can embed, you can add a URL there, or you can upload an image, which is what I did. So I uploaded the image that I had downloaded. And what it provided for me is a number of search results from the different places that this image is located on the web. And it came up with 5 different places. And what's really cool is it gives you some very similar images from across the web. So if you're viewing with me here, you can see there are a number of places where this actual image is used in different contexts, but there are all kinds of other different orange images of oranges across the web that I may think might be better for my use, and probably a great way to get a collection of images from which to choose and use the perfect image for your particular application. So images.google.com is a great place to search for images, especially if you have one that you can upload and find like images. The other recommendation from Jason's blog post, or the link that he gave us, was a tool called TinEye.com, TinEye.com, and it's a reverse image search, and it basically does the same thing. Now, I didn't get as good a results for this same image, so I uploaded the image, and I just got one result. And they sort it by best matched or biggest image or newest or oldest. And really, it only gave me one. So I don't think it gave me as good a results. But your mileage may vary, and maybe something to bookmark and try out as well. That's TinEye.com. Next piece of feedback was from Jim Bauer. And I'm going to get off my screen share here. There we go. And Jim had sent us an email, probably a month ago, where you might have remembered, he was looking for a list of all the Wells-associated websites and Facebook accounts. And we were able to point him to a number of places. There's no definitive list, but we gave him some resources, and he was pleased that we were able to provide that. What he was trying to do is build a kiosk or build kind of a portal that people could log in, or maybe in the church gathering space, or the area where they come in, they want to put up these touch screens and allow people to interact with the content that they would have available. So their bulletin, other Wells resources, I think that's why he was looking for that. And he gave us a little update this week. Jim, by the way, is at Christ in Baxter, Minnesota. So he says, Sally, last week we assembled the hardware for our touch screen. It works pretty slick. I attached a picture of it. Note the content was just initial content to look at and play with them. It had been a real challenge working on the WordPress end of things, and thought making a regular site compatible with browsers is a challenge. And, you know, that's absolutely true. But in the end, I think they have found a good solution for kiosk software. So we've got a link to some of the resources here, but basically his pastor saw the kiosks that they had built, kind of a built-in thing and a touchscreen and some interactive resources, and his initial comment was, it's a huge smartphone. And that's really what it is. They're trying to build a kiosk that you can interact with just like you would on a smartphone, get different resources. So great job, Jim, and thanks for sharing that. I think more congregations are probably going to think about this kiosk kind of thing as consumers, you know, as churchgoers are getting more and more used to interacting with these touch devices wherever they go. Makes sense that a church would deliver content through it right there. So I've seen churches start to think along those lines with offerings where you can log in and give an offering through a kiosk, those kinds of things. So I think that's going to be very popular. Our next piece of listener feedback is from one of our semi-regular classroom technology correspondents, and that is Gail Potratz. And she was pointing us to a blog post on MacLife.com about iOS, and iOS 8 in particular, and talking about AirPlay and how it's now working without Wi-Fi. Those of you that are familiar with iOS and how it works with AirPlay, you have a device, and there's another device on that same Wi-Fi network, and the two can share information. That's how Apple TVs work, too. A lot of you are thinking about or have Apple TVs in your classrooms if you're a teacher, which allows you to share your screen from your iPad, for instance. with the Apple TV, so that they can see on the big screen what you have on your little screen. And there's lots of use cases and applications for that. But the problem has always been that you needed to be on that same network. So, for instance, in a school, you may not have the teacher's network and the student's network on the same in the same network. So you can't maybe have a student connect to it and share their screen, or there's difficulty with navigating the networks. All kinds of things can crop up when you're having to be on the same network. So what iOS 8 is doing is it allows a device to communicate directly with a nearby device. I think that they're going to use Bluetooth to find other iOS devices in the area, like an Apple TV, that it can connect via AirPlay with, so you don't necessarily need to be on the same Wi-Fi network. What I think it'll do is once it finds that other device that you want to share content with or share your screen with, it finds it via Bluetooth, but then it creates its own little personal direct peer-to-peer Wi-Fi network just between the two devices. That might give better performance even, I'm not sure. So we'll see how that works. But that's good news for anybody who has Apple products and especially are using Apple products in the classroom. Or I suppose in a church setting, Bible class setting, that's helpful as well. So thank you, Gail, for sharing that. And then our last piece of, and that was through Twitter, by the way, our last piece of feedback is from myself, and this is also a new product or something new from, in this case, Microsoft. And it's a product called Office Mix. This kind of goes along with my conversation earlier about PowerPoint and the PowerPoint templates. What Office Mix does is it allows you to screencast your PowerPoint presentations and put it online. And the article talks a little bit about how they're making that more public. It's kind of in a preview mode now, although you can get a beta copy and try it out. But I've tried it a number of times and it's really easy. It just appears as a tab in your PowerPoint interface along the ribbon at the top. You click Mix, allows you to record, allows you to add interactive quizzes, true and false, multiple choice, short answer. And so you can screencast that, send it to your students. They can view the screencast of you doing this PowerPoint and also interact with the PowerPoint, answer the questions, and what you then get as a teacher is all those results back. So kind of like mini lessons that you could do here and get some assessments going as well throughout that PowerPoint with these tools that are built into Office Mix. So if you're interested in maybe flipping a classroom or trying it and using some screencasting techniques, Office Mix is probably not a bad thing to look at. If you go to mix.office.com, we'll get you to the right location. That is our community feedback for the day. And if you too would like to participate, we would encourage that. If you go to wellstech.wells.net, that's our show notes page, and you can leave a comment on any of our shows there to give us feedback on what we talked about in that show. wellstech@wells.net is our email address. And then if you also go to wellstech.wells.net, across the upper right of the screen, you will see a bunch of little icons, and a number of them I'm sure you will recognize. Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, Google+, those are all social networks that we frequent and monitor, so you can leave comments there. There's a link to our listserv, there's a link to our wiki. All of those places are places where we would encourage you to contribute, and we can share with the class. Last but not least, I want to share with you our YouTube video of the week. And last week we introduced a new playlist called Instructional. This week I added another video to that called 6 Quick Tips to Improve Your Digital Photography. I'm kind of in the photography mode right now. I'm going on vacation starting later this week, taking my camera. Expect to take some great pictures, hopefully. If you are a photographer or in charge of maybe taking pictures for school or church events, you probably want to do it as well as you can. And this particular video gives you just some basic common sense kinds of things, and just a good starter video, especially if you're just trying to figure out how to take good shots. So take a look at that. There will be a link in the show notes page. Well, I made it, and I'm sure Sally will do the same next week. So please don't be shy. Tune in next week to watch Sally talk about more WellsTech Wiki migration goodness. And please do tune in live if you would like to. She'd love the company as well. We had a few viewers this week, and we would love more next week. So let's give Sally a warm welcome next week. That's 4 o'clock. That'll be 4 o'clock next Tuesday afternoon, Central Daylight Time. If you go to wellstechlive.wells.net, that'll get you to our Google Hangouts page, and you can click on the Q&A link there and just post your comment, as a number of viewers did today. If not, you can always download it at wherever you find finer podcasts, that be on iTunes or right on our show notes page. Lots of different places. We're on Stitcher. We're looking into other places that we can add our show as well, so that more and more people can enjoy what we talk about here. Tell your friends, and please come back next week. Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.